You're listening to Para X.
The views and opinions expressed by the host and tonight's guest are not necessarily those of this radio network, its affiliates, or its sponsors. Listener discretion is advised. Now lock your doors, open your minds, and prepare yourself to go
beyond the edge.
It's Sunday night. Time for the hottest alternative talk radio on the planet. Welcome to Beyond the Edge Radio. Two hours of fascinating guests, mind-blowing topics, and stimulating conversation. All here on your home for the best alternative talk radio. This is Beyond the Edge Radio. Nervous? Scared? Don't be afraid. The wait will be over soon. Sit down, strap in, and hold on tight. You're about to be taken beyond the edge.
And good evening and welcome to another edition of Beyond the Edge Radio Live here on the Para X Radio Network. It's Sunday night, September 22nd, and what a beautiful Sunday it turned out to be. Not too hot, not too cold, sun is shining bright. Certainly better than it was yesterday, all that rain that came through the area, but a great day indeed. We've got a great show in store for everybody tonight on the program. We've got coming up at the bottom of this hour at the 8:30 time slot, Chris Dedman, paranormal investigator, TV show celebrity. He's done it all, lectures. I even hear rumor that he might be working on a special project. We'll ask him about later on in the show. But he's going to be joining us at the bottom of the hour. And coming up in about 10 minutes, we have a good friend of ours from over in the New Jersey area, Bruce Tango, joining us to tell us about a special event that he's been organizing and planning. And it's coming up in just a few weeks, so we'll be talking with him in just a few minutes. But we want to welcome to the program our co-host, The Fork Chop, Mr. Sean Forker. Good evening, Sean. How are you doing tonight, sir?
I'm doing great, Eric. Sitting here ready to commence with tonight's great show. New guest to Beyond the Edge Radio.
Yeah, it's. I'm excited to have Bruce come on the program and talk with us, and hopefully we can convince him to stick around for a little bit. And Chris Dedman is joining us tonight at the bottom of the hour. Both of them are friends of mine. I have had the pleasure of meeting Bruce at Phenomenology back in March, and then again a few weeks back at Parafest, and we had a chance to chat a little bit. And as I said, he'll be on in just a few minutes to talk about a special event that he's working on and we'll be promoting on the show here. And of course, Chris, I've known Chris for a long time. Going back to 2009, we attended an event in Fayette County together, benefiting Unity, A Journey of Hope. Mm-hmm. And great guy. He does some great investigations and just a super friendly guy to talk to. So I'm looking forward to having him on the show.
I as well.
Yes.
Looks like it's just you and I here tonight.
It does. Looks like Lon
lost power.
Yeah, so unfortunately, I don't think we're going to have Lon on with us tonight, but hopefully he'll be able to get his phone charged and either call into the show or we'll try him back in a little bit. But Lon Strickler is MIA, missing in action. Well, he's not really missing, but he's out. How about LPIA, lost power in action? How's that?
I guess it works.
That's stupid. I'm sorry.
His lap
lost.
Okay.
But as you can tell, I'm giddy tonight with excitement and really happy that we've got two great guests coming up on the show. Just got back from the Mothman Festival in Point Pleasant, West Virginia this weekend. And man, I'm telling you, Sean, you got to get your behind down to that event. It is a great festival. Jeff Walmsley and the organizers, I can't think of all their names, but they all did a great job putting this on. And even though we had some really heavy rain on Saturday, and it kind of scared the way the crowds during Saturday morning, they rebounded when the weather cleared up. It was a great crowd the rest of the day Saturday and into today. A lot of great people there. Lyle Blackburn, author of Beast of Boggy Creek, Craig Woolheater from Texas and Cryptomundo fame. Stan Gordon was there and his wife Debbie. Alan from Fathoms Frontier was there. Rosemary Ellen Guiley was there. I got to talk to Ro, a good friend of ours. A lot of great people were there this weekend. Ginger Bertline. I'm trying to think who else was there. I know I'm going to miss somebody. The Sieges were there. Bruce Harrington was there. Creature Seeker was there. Bruce Harrington, the Ruperts were there, the Seaches were there, Fred Saluga was there, Chad Lambert, who was on the show a few months back, was there. Just a great bunch of people there this weekend. A lot of fun. And if you get a chance, man, you got to get out there. And especially you got to ride that haunted hayride that runs Saturday night that takes you out through the TNT area. What a cool ride.
Oh, I heard from you and a multitude of folks that this was a great event, and I'm sorry I missed it. But hopefully I'll be able to make it next year. Maybe we can do a whole BT event there that weekend.
That would be fun to pre-record live an event from the festival. I think we'd have a good time doing that, and I think it would go over pretty well. Maybe we could sneak Jeff Wamsley on the show, get him on for a few minutes, and maybe even get the Mothman on. Who knows?
Who knows? We tend to have those kind of luck when we're out doing that kind of stuff.
Well, so. We've had stranger guests on the program, that's for sure.
We have. That lady that spoke to angels.
Yes.
For instance, she was pretty strange.
It was indeed. Coming up on next week's program, Mac Maloney joins us. He is the author of a brand new book called Beyond Area 51, The Mysteries of the Planet's Most Forbidden Top Secret Destinations. We've had Mac on before talking about UFOs during wartime, and looking forward to having him back next week. And then October 6th kicks off Shocktober here on BTE Radio.
Our favorite month, Shocktober, and we've got it lined up with some great guests. So folks, tune in. Every Sunday night here on Para X, and check it out.
That's right. That's right. But we're going to get to our first guest tonight who's coming on the program, and a little bit about this guest in case you don't know much about him. And anybody that doesn't know about this gentleman has got to be living under a rock. Bruce Tango is a highly decorated and retired police officer from Elizabeth, New Jersey. He was the youngest member to ever join the force at age 19. And in his 25 years on the force, he was involved in many aspects of law enforcement, including being a member of the SWAT team. Very cool. And working as a trained sniper as well. Among his commendations, Mr. Tango is a recipient of 3 Valor Awards for heroism. That's awesome. Very cool. He's been interested in ghosts and hauntings since he was a young boy. And during that time, before ghost hunting was popular, he got his son inspired. And his son Dave Tango, we all know from the sci-fi hit show Ghost Hunters, began his career researching the paranormal field. Bruce has appeared many times on Ghost Hunters, investigating with his son and the rest of the TAPS team, and you can meet Bruce in person at many events across the country. As I said, I got to meet him at Phenomenology. He was at Parafest, and he's going to be at this great event that he has coming up. So let's welcome to the show tonight, Bruce Tango. Good evening, Bruce. How are you doing this evening?
How are you doing, guys? It's a pleasure to be with you.
We're glad you're here with us. Yes, it's our pleasure to have you here, my friend. And you're here for a very special reason this evening, something that you've had in the works for a while, and this all goes down in just about 2 weeks from now, maybe 3 weeks. I'm thinking 3 weeks from now, and it looks like it's going to be a fantastic event. So tell us about this special event and the reason behind it.
Well, I've been working on this for about 2 years. I had an idea of doing this for 2 years, and it didn't start out to be a benefit, but it is now. The little boy, a 2-year-old little boy named Max Brenwall, is actually Grant Wilson's 2-year-old nephew. Now, we are like family, and when I heard this, I said to Grant, I said, let me try to do something here. So initially we were going to have a big charity or auction or a raffle, with all kind of items, which thank you very much, Eric, for donating some of the items. I appreciate it very much.
My pleasure.
A lot of celebrities donated the items, which are going to be part of the grand prize. We're calling it Monsters for Max, Monster Raffle. So, but it didn't evolve. I've decided to, make the entire event for Max. His father has recently lost his job, and, people don't understand not only with the insurance and everything, but the cost of getting around is just phenomenal, and it really, really, it's hard enough to deal with a situation of having a young child being sick, but having to worry about finances, it just shouldn't be. So we're gonna do all the that we can to try to help Max and the family, and looking forward to it. It's going to be a very interesting and fun night, and at the same time, we'll be helping some people out.
That's fantastic. And the event is called Monster Mash Mayhem, correct?
That's correct, yes. It's on October 12th in Westfield, New Jersey. It's at a big, beautiful hall. It's actually at a synagogue. It's called Temple Emmanuel Hall. The guy that runs it is an Irishman, but the people there have been wonderful. I've had events there, benefits before, the people there, the rabbi and the people, and my friend Mike Kenny, who manages the hall. It's a very big, beautiful hall, it holds a goodly amount of people. I'm anxious. It's only like a little less than 3 weeks away, like I said, I've had these ideas for a couple of years, at least it's going to for a good cause, I'm excited. People are going to have a lot of fun.
It looks like it's going to be a blast because it's not just a get together with friends, and you've got some pretty popular friends that are going to make an appearance there. I'm looking at the guest list of who's going to be there at the event, and friends of mutual friends of ours as well. But you're going to have other great events going on, like a costume contest, zombie dance, prizes and surprises. It looks like it's going to be a blast.
Well, just to give you an idea, people think, because we have celebrities that are coming, which I'll mention in a few minutes, is that it's like a convention. It's not a convention. This is a party. Mm-hmm. People what's going to happen when the people enter, they're going to have a chance to meet and greet all the celebs, which I'm going to mention in a minute. They can purchase a picture for them, take a picture with them, and then they're going to enter the hall and be seated at tables. We're going to have, like you said, Eric, we're going to have dinner. There's going to be a lot of monsters, ghosts, zombies, and ghouls coming around. And without giving it away, during the course of the evening, this is probably going to, the doors open at 5, and it'll probably go to about 11. But this, just to give you an idea, quite a few times during the evening, the lights are going to go out, and some pretty cool things are going to start happening. But I'm not going to give it away. You're going to have to come to Monster Mash Mayhem and find out what's going on. But even a lot of the celebrities don't know what's going to happen because I have people coming from all over the country, actors from different theater groups across the country that are going to be helping out. Like I said, even the celebrities don't know what's going on, a lot of them, but they're actually looking forward to it.
Fantastic. Now, when we talked to Parafest, I'm not going to let that cat out of the bag for you, but we did discuss one of the really cool things that's maybe happening at this event. And I really wish I could be there. If I didn't have something going on that weekend, I'd make the trip across Pennsylvania over to Jersey just to check that out.
Yeah, that's going to be my finale. I'm very excited about it. I'm excited about all performances. But altogether, I think we have about 15 performances during the course of the night, plus the costume contest. We're having a zombie dance contest, as you mentioned, and we're going to have prizes, and we're going to have dinner, and it's just going to be a nice evening for everybody. I told the guests, and the guests include, I'll mention them now, Felix Sheila. Now, he's probably best known as Cousin Ed on the original TV show, Adam's Family. Mm-hmm. Felix is a longtime friend of mine, and he's one of the most interesting people I've ever talked to be totally honest. he came from Italy at the age of 15. He joined the Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Circus, and he became a stuntman, and he's a stunt double for a lot of the children and young people that are in movies. He's been in, he was also Tweaky, you guys might be a little bit too young. But
oh, yeah. Bitty, 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 bitty.
Tweaky from Buck Rogers.
I'm too young for that.
He was in E.T.,
Oh.
He was the flying Ewok in Return of the Jedi.
Yes, I remember.
He was Indiana Jones in the Temple of Doom, Planet of the Apes for Charlton Heston. And a lot of people don't know this, but the original Don't Be Afraid of the Dark with the little creatures,
mm-hmm.
he was one of the little creatures. That's a real cool movie. That's one of my favorites.
Awesome.
But he's going to be there. Also, we have Kylie Zemanski. Kylie played in The Walking Dead. She was Penny Blake. She was the governor's daughter.
And, oh, yeah.
She'll be there. Kylie is a 10-year-old young lady, but she is a wonderful young lady. She's really, really talented and a little sweetheart. She's going to be there. Mike Koski, a good friend of mine. Mike has played over 42 different zombies in The Walking Dead series, and he's still going strong. Also, another longtime friend of mine, Mike Christopher, who is the iconic Harry Krishna zombie in The Dawn of the Dead.
Yep.
And I got my buddy Joe Chen from Ghost Hunters at Ghost Hunters International.
Mm-hmm.
Brian Knopf, great guy, great investigator from The Haunted Collector.
Yep.
Brett McGinnis from Ghost Hunters Academy. He's like a little whiz kid. He looks like he's 13, but he just turned 25 years old.
Wow.
And he's a director and a very smart young man.
Excellent.
I got another guy coming called Gentleman Jim. Now, Gentleman Jim is one of the best Elvis impersonators in the country. He's really, really good.
Nice.
And I have Rock with the Shark, radio DJ, who was very talented, does, I don't know, like 150 different type voices. He's going to be appearing there, too. Then I have MJX, who's one of the premier Michael Jackson impersonators in the country. It's going to be a great night with a lot of fine people, and it's just going to be a great, great time for everybody. And like I said, I'm hoping that people will go online to www.monstermashparty.com. That's monstermashparty.com.
It looks fantastic, Bruce. I'm looking at the guest list, and I know a lot of these people on the guest list. I had a chance to meet Felix at Parafest. And I met Mike at Phenomenology. Very cool guy. Both Felix and Mike are awesome people. Brian Kano, a very good friend of mine. I've known Brian for several years. And you've just got a great lineup of individuals. I met Joe Chin at Mid-South. And, of course, yourself. You'll be there. And people are looking forward to meeting you that haven't met you yet. So it looks just like a fantastic lineup of celebrities going to be there. And I know a lot of folks and a lot of mutual friends of ours are going to be coming to the event this year to help support it. Now, as I said, unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to make it, but I hope that the donations I helped out with and gave to you at Parafest will help. And if there's anything else that we can do on this, then please don't hesitate to ask.
Oh, you've done a lot, and I totally understand that, I know a lot of people would like to be there, but, October's busy, busy for a lot of people. But I do appreciate the items that you did give us, and, that was very nice of you, Eric. I do appreciate that.
Bruce, it was my pleasure to help out. My pleasure indeed. And what we're going to do, as I said, we're going to put the banner for the event up on our BTE website, and I'll put it on my Facebook page as well to help promote it. And we'll continue to talk about it up to the event, to make sure people are, aware of what's going on and when it is and where it is, and how they can get their tickets for it, how they can come out and help support Max and his family and support you as well, because you've got a big heart for doing this, Bruce, and I commend you for it, my friend.
There's no need to thank. It's just the right thing to do. That's what I tell people. But it's something that everybody's been to parties, obviously, and probably been to Halloween parties, but this is unlike any other type Halloween party that anybody's ever gone to. I guarantee that. And like I said, I'm not going to give it away, but it's just going to be a night to remember, and I do hope, people will buy. In fact, I'll tell you what, if anybody listening to your show, they have up until midnight, if they buy a ticket tonight and leave a message that they were listening to your show, if they buy one ticket, they'll get a ticket free.
Wow.
How about that? That's pretty awesome.
That is really cool, Bruce. Thank you.
That just popped in my head, and I've done that, yesterday, but it was like a trivia question. But anyone listening to your show now, if they go online and buy a ticket, they'll get one free. Just leave a comment that they were listening to your show, and I'll make sure they get two tickets. If they order two, they'll get four. So it's just as a thank you back to you guys and for the listeners. I appreciate it very much.
Oh, that's very generous of you, Bruce. Like I said, you got a big heart, my friend, and I'm proud to know you and call you a friend. So thank you very much for coming on the show tonight and sharing this with us. And we hope this really helps out Max and his family. And it's a great cause. And I know exactly what Max's dad's going through, the family's going through. There's hundreds and thousands of families out there dealing with very similar situations. And even if you can make the difference in one person's life, one child's life, it makes it all worthwhile.
Exactly. You know, everybody has problems. I understand that. Yeah, and there's children across the United States. There's so many. I can't tell you how many young people I've gotten to know that have cancer. Some are surviving. Some haven't. But you have to pick and choose. Obviously, we would like to, but we can't help everybody. But we have to pick and choose our battles. This is one battle because, you know, it's sort of like family.
Sure.
Grant
mm-hmm.
is like a brother to me, and this is his nephew. And you know, you look at that picture, and you just want to hug the kid, and you wish he could help everybody, but unfortunately, we can't. So we pick and choose our battles, and this is one battle that we've chosen to try to do something for.
Well,
so I want to thank you guys. I want to thank you guys so much for letting me come on and talk about it, and I appreciate all your help.
Oh, it's our pleasure, Bruce. And you're welcome on the show anytime you like. Matter of fact, I wanted to invite you to stick around for a little bit after the break if you'd like, because we have Chris Dedman coming up, and Chris was looking forward to saying hello to you, and I know you wanted to say hello to him. So you're more than welcome to hang out with us this evening on the program and chat with Chris and stick around if you like. If you can't...
Sure, I'll stick around for a little while. That sounds good.
Fantastic.
Say hello there, Chris.
Fantastic. We're glad to hear that. Thank you very much, my friend. And again, the website, if you want to check out this great event, is monstermashparty.com, monstermashparty.com. It's being organized by Bruce Tango of the Ghost Hunters. He's appeared on the show several times. Father of Dave Tango. We all know Dave. Another great guy I had the chance to meet at Parafest. And it's got a heck of a lineup. Go to the website to see the list of people who's going to be there. Tickets are dirt cheap, $56, and you get a meet and greet, dinner dancing, live entertainment, a costume contest, a zombie dance contest. I'd love to see that. That would be so cool. Prizes, surprises, and so much more. Again, the website is monstermashparty.com. I'd love to see zombies dance. You got to admit it. That'd be awesome.
It is. It is great.
They can barely walk, but you just see them dancing around. That'd be great. But monstermashparty.com, monstermashparty.com. Check it out. Help support Max Brimall and his family. And, you know, they need the help, folks. So do what you can do and help support Bruce as well. So Bruce is going to stick around with us. And hopefully we can get Lon back on the air because Lon lost power. He's MIA. He's sitting in the dark somewhere. So poor Lon.
He likes to sit in the dark, though. That's his thing.
I think he's in the dark most of the time, but maybe Lon was cousin it.
He could be. Well, he got a haircut now. That
he did.
Apply.
He did get a haircut. But we've got a great show tonight on the program. Chris Dedman, paranormal investigator, and a very good friend of mine. As I said, I've known Chris for, a long time now. But a little bit about Chris before we go to break. He is a television personality. He's appeared on America's Most Terrifying Places in America, Ghost Adventures, the Discovery Channel's Ghost Lab, Bio Channel's My Ghost Story, and you've seen him on the episode of Paranormal State, I Am 6. He was also involved in that case before it went to PRS, or PSR, excuse me, Penn State Research Society. But he's a native of Lexington, Kentucky. He's been researching and investigating the paranormal for many years. At age 15, Chris saw his first ghost while filming the movie Gettysburg in Gettysburg. There's a pretty interesting way to see a ghost. And since then, he's been hooked. The personal experience gave him the desire and motivation to seek out answers within the paranormal field. And due to his investigating of the paranormal, Chris works with several families on cases dealing with possible paranormal activity and teaches them how to deal with it. He's a member of the Swords of St. Michael Spiritual Warfare and Deliverance. And like I said, he's a great guy. He's in the Kentucky Indiana chapter and the Life Foundation Incorporated of PRRS. So really cool guy. Looking forward to having Chris on the show. He'll be up with us in just a few minutes. So you got anything before we head to break, Sean?
Oh, just one thing, Eric. Sure. And, you know, for the Bigfoot community, found out today from our good friend Tom Yamarone that our colleague and friend Joyce Kearney passed away on Friday. And those of that listen that know Joyce used to travel cross country to come to the Ohio Bigfoot Conference. And it's sad to report that she passed away. And, you know, our thoughts are with her friends and family. And nothing but good memories of Joyce, Eric.
Joyce was a wonderful woman. When I was organizing and putting on the Bigfoot conferences here in Pennsylvania, she helped us out tremendously. She supported us. She would send in donations, whether they were items for our auction or cash donations to help fund the conference. She was a big supporter of what we did and believed in us. And I've known Joyce for almost 10 years. And I was very saddened to hear about the news of the passing of Joyce. So our deepest thoughts and condolences go out to her family and friends. And we're going to miss her. She was a wonderful woman.
She was indeed. You introduced her to me years ago at the Ohio conference, and what a lovely lady.
That I did, and yeah, she definitely was. So farewell, our friend, and we will miss you. You were a great woman and such an inspiration to a lot of us in the Bigfoot research community because you stuck by a lot of people and you supported them, and that's what this field should be about, is standing by people and supporting them. So we are very honored to know you and call you our friend, and we will miss you. All right, my friend, what do you say we head to our first break of the evening, and we go ahead and we get try to get Lon back on the show if we can. Maybe I'll send him a generator.
There you go. Send him something.
Yeah, exactly.
Get one of those bicycles.
Right, right.
Pedals and creates electricity.
But, yeah, let's take our break, and we come back. We will be welcoming to the program Chris Dedman. And Bruce Tango has graciously agreed to stick around with us as well, so make sure you keep it right here to Para X Live. ParaXradio.com is the website, and we are BTE Radio, that stands for Beyond the Edge Radio, live every Sunday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern. Tonight with Eric Altman and Sean Forker. We'll be back after the break.
Kick back, relax, and crack a cold one. Beyond the Edge Radio will be right back. Just when you thought it was safe, safe, safe. Beyond the Edge Radio is
and welcome back to tonight's program. This is BTE Radio, Beyond the Edge Radio, live here on the Para X Radio Network, 833 here on the East Coast, and we've got a humdinger of a show tonight. Not only do we have Bruce Tango hanging out with us, which is super cool, he's agreed to stick around for a little bit, but we've got my good buddy, who I stole his thunder. I got to tell you that right off the top. I stole his thunder back in 2009, and he's hated me ever since for it.
He's a smart man.
He's a smart man, yeah.
Don't trust that kidding. Eric Altman.
I had the real distinct pleasure of meeting this next gentleman who's going to be on our show tonight in 2009 at the Unity Journey of Hope event down in Fayette County. They were doing a great event that weekend, and I just showed up just as a guest. You know, I was there to, you know, kind of hang out, thanks to Bobby and John Robinson. And I met this gentleman, and a TV crew came in, and they were filming an interview. They wanted to do an interview with me about Bigfoot. And Chris is like, well, when are they going to interview us? Oh, no, they're here to interview Eric. And Chris is like, what? We're here for the event, and they're here to interview him. So that's our running joke. But let me welcome to the program my good friend Chris Dedman. Good evening, Chris. How you doing, brother?
And, you know, Eric, you're lucky you play with big apes, or I would have gotten you back. But, you know, since you have them in your corner and everybody has seen the Jack Link commercial on what they can do, You're pretty safe, buddy. I'm just saying.
I'm smart.
You're lucky you got big boys like that that got your back. That's all I can say. it's so funny is that whole thing was, I was actually up, I was upstairs, I was doing something, and they had come to get me and said, there's a TV crew here that, you know, you need to come down for an interview. And I was like, and I didn't really want to do it in the first place. And, you know, because I wasn't from there. I didn't, you know, it was just, I just didn't feel comfortable with it. And then, so it was actually a blessing in disguise that it worked out the way it did. You were from the area, you know, and, you got me kind of out of a pinch, but it is funny, you know, it's kind of, you know, I was like, what? Okay. Well, I was more like it in a relief than it was of a shock or whatever. But yeah, that was, you know, that's one of those events I still talk about to this day. That was such an amazing event. It was me, Denise Jones, Steve LaChance, Chip Coffey,
the Johnson Brothers. Keith was there.
Also, Keith and Sandra Johnson, mm-hmm. and all. I mean, it was one of those events where all of us got along, so there was no drama. It was just a fun event. It was really cool, and the inn did not let us down. It was plenty haunted, and I had just been briefly experimenting a lot with the Frank's box, the ghost box, or you know, the shack hack, many have called it. And I knew Keith and Sandra Johnson were coming, but I didn't know they were there already. We had already went and started investigating the first night, and we were upstairs in the very top bedroom, and I was using the ghost box, and the thing came through, and it said Keith's name, plain as day. Hmm. And I said, Keith who? And it said Johnson. And I said, do you want Keith Johnson? And it said yes. And I said, and I was like, well, you know, maybe there's something here, you know. So I kept asking questions, and it was responding. I mean, literally to the question I asked, it was responding. There was no choice of knowing anything else than that it was really wanting Keith Johnson. So I closed the box down, and, you know, I told it, I said, you know, I'll be right back. Let me go see if he's here. And sure enough, Keith and Sandra had gotten there right after we started doing the ghost hunt, and this was about an hour into it, and they were on the floor below me. And I went down and I said, is Keith here? Has anybody seen Keith? Has he made it? And Keith actually spoke up and said, hey, it's me. And I said, Keith, this is going to sound crazy, but I'm using the ghost box upstairs. Hear this as a ghost hunter telling another ghost hunter, this may sound crazy. I'm using the ghost box, and this thing has called you out by name. And he wasn't very familiar with it at the time. He had seen it used a couple of times. So he came up there, and I started asking questions again, and said, you know, the spirit that's here that needs Keith Johnson, are you here? And it said, yes. And it said, Keith. Well, I looked at Keith and, like, you know, told him, take over. And Keith said, this is Keith, I'm here. And it said, Johnson. And he said, yes, this is Keith Johnson. And it said, help. Hmm. And he said, you need help. And it said, yes. And he said, do you need help crossing over? And it said, yes. And I won't go into, it was a very personal moment that took place. And it was really, one, it was eye-opening to see the ghost box work in the manner that it did, because it's gotten a lot of controversy over the years. But to see Keith use it as a tool to cross over this spirit that was lost and needed to be crossed over was just, I was in awe. Like, that was like one of the most memorable moments. I can't even talk. It really was. It was just wild and shocking and, you know, exhilarating all at once to see that this ghost box not only worked, but that Keith was able to use it to cross spirits over. And because he has dealt with the spirit world so much, you know, they're very well in tune with him and when he's around, and you know, his wife Sandra, and it was so awesome, you know what I mean, to see someone, a veteran like that, had been in the field for as long as he had, and that I respected immensely, to do what he does, you know. So that event was really cool. It was also the first event where I had seen Chip Coffey used the Maglite flashlight as a communication device. Oh. You know, on command. You know, and this, he was using it then, and it really didn't pick up in the field until, you know, almost 3 years later. Then you started finally seeing it on TV and other people using it, and he was already in the midst of using it, you know, and it was teaching me how to do it and the other people that are around. And So there was a lot of stuff came out of that event, you know. So it was meant to be, definitely. And of course, you know, Bobby and her husband John with the foundation that they have, you know, I'm a member and promote immensely as much as I can. You know, it's basically, I tell everybody, it's the Make-A-Wish Foundation for adults. Mm-hmm. They, you know, there were two hospice nurses that came together and formed this charity called Journey of Hope, and they grant wishes to adults that are dying of illness or whatnot, and they've been able to do a lot of things for people, and it's a phenomenal organization.
Oh, I couldn't agree more, and I'm a supporter of the organization. I've done some lecturing, as you have, for them and helped them out with promoting and doing what I can do for them. I'm happy to. And that's why he had Bruce on the show tonight. Bruce is promoting an event that he's putting on in just a few weeks, the Monster Mash Mayhem event in October. I'm sure you're familiar with that.
Oh, cool. Yeah. I didn't know Bruce was a part of that. That's awesome.
Yeah, most definitely. Now, Bruce, let me ask you a question, bud. Hopefully you're still on the phone with us.
I'm still here.
Okay, great. Have you used the Frank's box or the flashlight to communicate with spirits?
Yes, I've been involved with investigations using both flashlights and the ghost box, or Frank's box, if you will. But to be honest, sometimes nothing. And then sometimes, just absolutely amazing, as Chris was saying, you know, a few times it was just above and beyond coincidence. When you start getting direct answers, you know, it just doesn't happen that way. You know, people say it's just, you know, you know how the box works. It just randomly goes to different stations and such, and people say it's just luck. But no, it is a little beyond luck when you start asking questions, and then right after your question, you'll get an answer, a direct answer to your question. And I was involved with one. I was with my buddy John Zaffis, and we were asking questions, and sure enough, we asked how many of his spirits were there. They gave us a number. Was there women there? And they would say yes. And can we talk to that to a woman? And the guy, evidently, that was the spirit that was talking to us, was evidently in charge, because he said he wouldn't let any woman. He says no women. So it you know, sometimes when you do these investigations, you just gotta use your head. You know, is it above and beyond what coincidence should be? But when you're doing an investigation using that instrument, and you know, you're doing a half hour or so, or 45 minutes, and you're just constantly getting answers. That's above and beyond coincidence. Yet other times I've used it, and it was nothing. But that's just the way it goes. And when you're ghost hunting, and the flashlights, I've had interesting experiences. One being, I went along with a group. First time I had met them, they asked me to sit in. I did so, and they had three flashlights, long story short, three flashlights. They were asking questions for a good 40, 45 minutes. I did not say a word. I just listened in. The flashlights would not blink during that whole time. Hmm. And they said, Bruce, why don't you ask the last question? So I did so. I said, if you want us to leave right now, light all three lights, flashlights up. And lo and behold, all three of them came on. And I said, well, it looks like it's time to go, guys. So it was pretty cool. So all three of them to come on at the same time, that was pretty cool. You know, and then sometimes it doesn't work. It's a hit-and-miss type thing. But, you know, you just got to use your head once in a while.
It's funny that Bruce said that, Eric, about the multiple flashlights, because we've done that also with my team. We had a place in Georgetown, Kentucky that we were given free reign of for about a year and a half, and we were in there investigating, and we had multiple flashlights set up, and on command, we would tell it to go to whatever flashlight, and it would do it, And I remember going, all right, if you're really doing this, I want them to come on right now at the same time, and boom, they did. But like Bruce said also, I've been in places where we've used a flashlight and it not do anything at all night long. It just sat there, and nothing would happen. And the same thing with the ghost box. I've used it in locations and not had anything happen. But as a former radio DJ, people need to realize one thing about the ghost box or the Shack Hack is that every time you hear that thing click, it's changing a station. And for it to multiply say a word or more or less a sentence, you're talking about a series of probably 6-7 stations that it's switching to within that time. And for each one of those stations to say the phrase, the piece of the sentence or word to go along with the whole sentence that you're getting, the number is astronomical for it to work. There's no way for it to be able to work to where you're going to change the station and all 6, 7, 8 stations say their phrase exactly at the right moment when that changes for it to make it. It doesn't work that way, people. It just doesn't. And I've talked to people in the you know, Radio Broadcasting Association and stuff, and they've assured me there's no way that it could be done in the way we're using it. So for those that don't get it, don't understand, when that station, when it's going click, 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 and that's the noise that a lot of people hear and refer to, it's changing a channel each time you hear that click. So it to get a full sentence or a word or whatever, it's not possible.
So aside from the Frank's box, guys, tell me a little bit more about the flashlights with the communicating with the flashlights.
Basically, what it is you take a mag flashlight. Now, I've seen here recently, I've seen people using the push button flashlight, like the LED. You push the back of it, and it comes on, which is even more surprising to see that one work. But what I had been shown by Chip originally was a mag light, and you take it and you twist it. You know, you twist the head of it to make the light come on and off. So you twist it just to where it's not making contact. So there's no contact being made. You're just right at the threshold. And basically the concept behind it is when a spirit or whatever who is manifesting or using energy touches the flashlight, it makes the connection between the bulb and the battery, which is causing it to come on. And you can get, and I've seen it on command, I've seen these flashlights work where you can get them. Matter of fact, we were in an old plantation house in the basement where they had done damaging things to slaves down there, and we were talking to a spirit using it and was having no problems at all, and then all of a sudden you just felt this evil presence, this darkness. I mean, the room got thick, your hair stood on the back of your neck, and you know, I said, whatever's here, you need to stay away. We are not talking to you. We're talking to this other spirit, and it's communicating through this flashlight. You need to leave it alone. And I kid you not, the flashlight all of a sudden turned on. Not only did it turn on, but it turned on as bright as it could, and the bulb actually blew in the flashlight.
So it's not just like a pulsating of light. It's actually increasing the output of the bulb to the point it burns out.
Yes. Yes. Well, this spirit basically was telling me, you know, no, you're not going to talk anymore. I'm the dominant spirit. You're not going to talk to this spirit anymore. And he blew the bulb. He got rid of the flashlight. I mean, it was pretty interesting. It wasn't just like a bulb that just you turned on and it blew. I mean, it came on and then it got intensely bright, and then it just blew.
Aside from the flashlights, did anything else interesting happen with equipment malfunctioning or acting oddly when you've been doing investigations?
You know, I've had the common occurrence with, you know, light bulbs or, you know, batteries draining. You know, you charge up or put new batteries in something and go into an area and it go haywire. Something that's really interesting is that in the axe murderer house in Valeska, Iowa, there is nothing in that house that is electric or water. They've taken it back to the early 1900s state. It's basically a museum in a sense. So when you a K2 meter in there, if you're picking something up on a K2, it's because there's more than likely there's something there. If a K2 really picks up, you know, spirits and energy and stuff, like, you know, we believe that it does, then in a house like that, you're not going to have to worry about any interference as far as power lines in the house or running underneath the floor or anything like that that you will in a modern home or something like that. I know sometimes you can pick up spikes and stuff, especially in basements and stuff. But there's times that I've been in that house and the K2 peg red in certain areas and will not go off. Like, it just stays red. It won't, you can't get it to stop doing it. So I think in certain locations there are things that I've seen where it just, depending on what's there and that you're picking up, you know, I've seen, digital recorders, you know, go haywire in certain locations, and you go back to listen to the audio and it sounds like it's everything's in reverse. But that investigation with the flashlight by far has been one of the ones that it really sticks in my mind, because it was, you just knew what was there was some way evil in a sense. I'm not saying it was, you know, everybody wants to throw that demonic word around. It wasn't that. It was something that just was evil. It just didn't, you know, if it was an evil person in its time when it was alive or whatever, it did not want us there, and it was making itself very well known that we weren't going to communicate with it anymore.
That's interesting to hear. Now, you mentioned the Villisca Max murder house. That's someplace that just really enthralls me. I mean, I can't believe some of the things that actually happened in that house. I mean, the real history, and then I hear about some of the paranormal activity that's happened in that house, not just from yourself, Chris, but from other researchers. Troy Taylor has had some amazing things happen in that house, as well as other researchers and investigators. I know the Ghost Adventures crew was there a few seasons ago, and I believe you were part of that episode.
Yeah.
It's a fascinating place. Bruce, have you been to the Villisca Axe Murder House?
No, I haven't, but I know what you're talking about, yeah.
It's a fascinating place. Chris, can you give us a little history on the what really happened there, what transpired there, and some of the strange occurrences that are reported to go on?
Well, in 1910, basically, a family leaves to go to church. While they're at church, someone enters the home and hides in an upstairs attic area. You actually have to go into a closet and then through another door to get into the attic area. And then when the family came home and went to bed, the person came out of the attic area and murdered the entire family, including two children that were visiting, with an axe. And he didn't use the sharp end of the axe. He actually used the blunt end of the axe. And he basically bashed their heads in. It's one of the most horrific unsolved murders in American history. They had several people that they thought were suspects, including a traveling reverend that was in the area. And actually, the reverend actually admitted that he did do the crime and was tried but was found to not be guilty. There was a lot of corruption behind what was going on. The man of the house had had a partner in town. They'd had a business and kind of broke off, and supposedly the partner, you know, hired a hitman to take out the family. And but it's just one of those crimes that you know, when you do the research on it and you read about it, it's really, really you know, gut-wrenching and emotional, especially as a parent, you know, to see that, you know, these children were murdered and out of cold blood, and there was a lot of odd things. The killer covered up all the mirrors with blankets. There was bacon, raw bacon, found at the foot of the beds. You know, just a lot of crazy stuff that never really made sense to the crime or what had happened. And there's actually in the ceiling in some of the rooms, there are the sharp end of the axe went into the ceiling, so those marks are still there. When he was drawing the axe back, you know, to in the hammer motion or whatever, he actually hit the ceiling, and there's marks left in the ceiling. But some of the things that go on there in the kids' room upstairs, the closet door open and close on its own, that was actually caught when the GAC was there. That actually happened. You can hear what sounds like blood dripping, like falling. Where, you know, they had bled to death and the blood pooled and then it started dripping from the bed onto the floor. People have been attacked, have been pushed. I've been attacked in the house. I got scratched. I've been pushed down the steps. You know, nasty EVPs, people, you know, of something that's evil there. So yeah, there's a lot of activity and a lot of things, and you know, I haven't really investigated the house. I went there this summer. Actually, was the first time I had been back there since we filmed with GAC, and even then, I didn't even go into the house because it's just there's an evil in there, and it can be nasty.
Well, I just can imagine still seeing the axe marks in the ceiling. That's got to be creepy.
It makes it surreal. You know what I mean? Like when you see that, it you almost feel like you're there in the story. It's not just a story anymore. You're seeing the evidence, and that's just it's just kind of crazy, you know, to do it. It was one of those things that I wanted to do, and then afterwards it was kind of like, yeah, maybe I should have thought that through a little bit more. But something that's really interesting that a lot of people don't understand that didn't catch it or whatever, but there's a place in Atchison, Kansas called the Sally House, and it's an evil house also. I was fortunate enough to meet the couple that lived in the house and dealt with the torment and the nightmare there at Phenomenology a couple years ago. And the Pittmans, and we went there this summer. We didn't go in it. I had no desire to. We just went to the house to see it and kind of its history and, you know, being in the field we're in. A lot of people have talked about it. And that house has the same address as the Villisca, Iowa house.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, I think the difference is it's one's a south and the other one's a west or something, you know, like it's 502 South, you know, whatever street, and then the other one is like, you know, 502 West whatever street or whatever. That's the only difference though, but they have the exact same number and everything. 508 or whatever it is, the same street name and everything, just it's the east west or whatever is different. That's the only thing. And it's kind of odd that both those houses have a horrific background in what took place there, and they have the same address. You know, what's the coincidence? You know,
it's pretty strong, pretty strong coincidence. Chris, of these investigations you've done, what's been the most intense moment or the most intense place you've ever investigated?
A lot of people that have been following me and have done been to my lectures know that I talk about a case that I did in Quincy, Illinois in 2008 that later would be a part of Paranormal State, their very first one-hour episode. It was a case they helped, you know, came in and helped with. It was called I Am Six, and it was a case where a girl was possessed. I must say, you know, that case, I still deal with things to this day because of that case. You know, we went there thinking that it was just a normal haunting. If anything, a poltergeist. We had narrowed it down that there was a German immigrant that had built the house, and he had done some work around the area of Quincy, a lot of the church architectural brick, you know, the bricklaying company, and we thought maybe it was him coming through, and it didn't take very long to find out it was something evil, it was something demonic, and we had a lot of people that wanted to give us advice, and we reached out to people, and, you know, some people were willing to even come, but we had to get them there. We had to pay for transportation and stuff, and, you know, we were a blue-collar group that lived check to check, so that was kind of hard to do, and mm-hmm. Our last resort was going to a TV show, and we had been talking to Ryan and his team way before this case had even come about, so when it did come about, we just felt that they had the resources and the people and the money that could get help to this family, and they did, you know, they did, and that's what it was about. It wasn't about being on TV. It was helping this family and giving them a peace of mind. But that case by far is one that has just, you know, it's a battle I deal with every day. It's once you deal with demons, you're marked for life. And, it really has. I've gone through a lot with my family since that case.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that.
You know, it haunts you every day. That's why it makes me sick when I hear, you know, when I see these Facebook posts of people saying, you know, oh, I can't wait to meet a demon, or I can't wait to see my first demon, or I can't wait to get out there and investigate. And then, you know, what, too long ago, there was a team that was posting for $50 you could pay to go actually to a haunted location that was knowingly haunted by a demonic entity. So you could pay to go see a demon, basically. And these people, they just don't understand. They don't get it. This is not something you can turn on and turn off. It's real. And once you deal with it, it will try to destroy you. You know, I don't push my religion on anybody, my beliefs on anybody, but, you know, what I do believe and what I believe in my religion, it says that, you know, the devil's main goal is to destroy man because you're made in the image of God. And when you play with fire, you will be burned. And, you know, I've gone through a lot since that case. I've almost lost my kids in a fire, along with my parents. Lost, you know, my family members who have worked for, you know, the men of the family who had worked at jobs for years in a stable condition were all laid off within 2 weeks of each other. You know, car wrecks, financial problems, just, you know, the list goes on, and it just wasn't me. It's anybody that dealt with this case or had something to do with it. They've all had major problems since this case. So it's, you know, too far of it being just a coincidence. You know, when you start connecting the dots, it's hard to not look at the bigger picture, you know.
Well, I'm really glad you shared that with us, Chris, because one of the things that we do on the show is kind of a cautionary warning for, you know, newcomers to the field of paranormal investigating, and that's don't mess with that stuff. It seems like it's good on TV until you actually experience it, and that's not anything anybody should be messing around with unless you've got the seasoning and the experience to back it up there.
Absolutely, and you know, I'm a member of the paranormal clergy, which is led by Archbishop James Long, who has been featured on a couple of the shows and stuff, and he'll even tell you, he's like, you know, I've told Zach many a times, you know, don't go into these situations and provoke and stuff, because, you know, one day you're going to do that and it's going to answer back and it's not going to be healthy. But even those guys, in doing what they've done, have all suffered a lot of stuff. There's a lot of personal things that they've lost and dealt with and have suffered, and that the public don't even know about. And they'll kind of tell you, yeah, we probably shouldn't have done that, or, yeah, we probably shouldn't have pushed the envelope as far as we did, because, you know, we've paid for it, you know. And time to them is not like time to us. You know, it's, you know, it may not act out at that very moment. You may not see what it can do or what it's going to do, but when it does, it's going to come with a vengeance, and you're going to know it. And it's that's when you've got to worry. And even in the field of being an investigator or being in the paranormal, we don't know what the long-term effects of us doing this. It may not have anything to do with us. It may be, you know, down the road where our children's children are the ones that pay for the mistakes and the ignorance of what we did. And that's kind of what, when you start thinking about it in that manner and that level, it can kind of open your eyes a little bit.
Bruce, you're still with us.
Yes, I'm listening to Chris speak, and very interesting. I agree with a lot of what he says.
And we're posing the same question to you, Bruce. What's been the most frightening or intense experience you've had while ghost hunting?
Well, the most frightening experience I had is, like many other people that come out and talk about the story, is when I was a child. It was my first experience. It's probably my earliest memory. What had happened, long story short, people ask me all the time, have you ever dealt with an evil entity or anything? This is probably the only time, and it was when I was about 4 or 5 years old. What had happened is I woke up during the middle of the night. At the foot of my bed was a 6-foot figure of a male, and he was sort of catty-cornered to me, not squared up. But he was just looking at me with a grin on his face. But what was scary about the whole thing was that his face was red. Now, if I was making this up, I wouldn't add that part because it doesn't make sense. But I'm just telling you what happened. He just stood there, didn't say or do anything. I slept in. At that time, I was the oldest in my family. It was me. I have a sister, one sister at that time. She's a year younger than me. She had her room. I had my own room. And my mom and dad slept on a sofa bed in the living room. So this entity is staying at the foot of my bed, and I just covered my head. And I started praying, and you can imagine how scared I was. And while I'm telling the story, I'm sure you guys will be thinking of some questions, and other people do, but I'll probably answer them before you even ask. Now, that same entity appeared 2 more times within a year's period. Did the same thing, appeared at the foot of my bed, and just looked at me and stared with a grin on his face, red face. The third time when he came, I got out of my bed, and I walked out of my door, and I went down the hallway. My mom and dad used to leave the bathroom light on as a nightlight for us. So I went into the bathroom, went down the hallway. I sat on the toilet for a good half hour, 45 minutes. Obviously, I was crying. I was very scared. I was shaking. And after about 45 minutes, I crept down the hall. And when I entered my room, he was still standing there. So I turned around, went right back in the bathroom, and I wound up sleeping in that room. Now, before you ask me why I didn't wake up my mom and dad, and I've told this story quite a few times, without getting too personal, is that, and this may sound funny, but actually it isn't, is that I would rather dealt with that entity than wake up my father. My father was a very, very harsh man. And that's the best way I could put it. I was more afraid of my father, unfortunately, than I was of the entity which scared the hell out of me. But this actually happened in an apartment. I could draw you a picture of the apartment like it was yesterday. I think about this quite often. But like I said, it didn't say or do anything. But all I could tell you, and you can read between the lines, is that I have no good memories from that apartment. I was born there, and I lived there until I was about 7 or 8. Nothing good was happening to anybody in that apartment. My mom, my dad, my sister, and me. And if I ever write a book, which I've been told too many times, I'll make it a little more, you know, I'll explain a little bit better. But chances are it was an evil type presence. Either that it was thriving on everything that was happening in that household or causing it. But it was the scariest thing I ever had to deal with.
And you never did find out who or what that entity was?
No. But honestly, it's in the town that I worked as a police officer. And it's actually a project. Like I said, I remember the apartment number. I could draw a diagram of it. And there's been talk of them possibly leveling this project because it's not like it was when I was a child. It's changed quite a bit. And the guys are going to tell me if that ever happens, because not that anything would happen. I don't know what would happen, but I'd like to go in there and do an investigation just overnight and just see what happens. And believe me, it would probably be very emotional for me, because there's a lot of bad memories from that time.
Folks, you're listening to Beyond the Edge Radio on the Para X Radio Network. Tonight we're joined by Chris Dedman and Bruce Tango. I'm Sean Forker with Eric Altman here. Lon Strickler is off with power issues tonight, but it's been a very good show nonetheless.
I'm really enjoying it. Yeah, Chris and Bruce are great to have on the program, guys. You've kept me pretty riveted. Like I said, I'm a big fan. I shouldn't say a fan, but it really intrigues me. The Villisca Axe Murder House and the Sally House. I met the Pittmans at Phenomenology, and they're wonderful people. They really are. Their story is very, especially when you really hear their story in detail, it's just nerve-rattling. And Bruce, what you've explained tonight, seeing that entity standing at the foot of your bed, just gave me the goosebumps. That's why I stick to Bigfoot hunting. It's a little more safe for me.
Yeah. You know, when I tell that story, I have to tell people. I said, "Listen, if I was making this up," and I really felt very blunt. I'm very honest with them. I say, "Listen, I don't care if you believe me or not. You've asked me a question. I'm going to tell you." And like I said to you guys, if I was making it up, I wouldn't ask about the red face. I mean, that's what scared me. I mean, it was bad enough somebody standing there, but the red face. I don't know, but like I said, they didn't say or do anything, except scare the hell out of me. But I'd love to go back in there and see what happens. And I explain, because if you guys saw the movie, and I always talk about this after I tell that story, Insidious, did you guys see that movie?
I haven't yet.
Well, there's a part in there, and just to clear this up, I was telling my story before Insidious came out. And the figure, the entity in that movie is very similar to what I saw, except my guy, thank goodness, didn't have those long fingernails. That would have got me worse. But it's a little different, but very. In fact, I was watching the movie with my son Dave, and he knowing the story. He kept on looking over to me, and when we walked out, he said to me, he said, "Dad, it brought back memories, didn't it?" I said, "Yes, it did, Dave." And that's all we talked about. You know, that was the end of the discussion about that. But I have to make that clear. You know, that happened, and obviously it's something I'll never forget.
You know, when you were talking about the Sally House, Eric, when we went to the Sally House this summer, one of the guys that comes to a lot of events with me, my best friend, his name's Robert, he's had some stuff like Bruce just talked about happen to him when he was younger, and that's kind of how he got into the field and got connected with me. Actually, we were talking about this past weekend at Scarefest. You know, it's been 5 years that we first met, and you know, he's been there ever since. And I had been told for years that when you go to the Sally House, when you get a couple blocks away to go ahead and turn your digital recorder on, because you'll start picking up EVPs.
Really?
Before you even get, oh yeah, before you even get to the house.
Wow.
And so we had turned on our digital recorder, and we got to the house. There was a guy across the street that was mowing his yard and stuff. So you could hear, when we went back to listen, you could hear the weed eater and stuff going on. But as we started approaching the house, you could hear what sounded like a female and two men talking. And the house is empty. It's not vacant. And actually, the only way you can get access to the house is you have to make contact with the Chamber of Commerce there in the town. And that's how you can get into the house. So we were kind of like, oh, crap, there's people in the house. You know, mm-hmm. we're kind of walking up to it or whatever. And so I was like, I don't care. I've driven this far. I'm going to walk up to the house. And, you know, somebody's there. I'm going to let them know, hey, we're just looking around. So I walk up to the door. And of course, as we got louder, the voices got louder. And there's a window, big window. You can see right into the house right next to the front door. And I kind of walked up to the window and looked in to see if there was anybody in there, and the house was empty, completely empty. Hmm. There was nobody in the house. Nothing was in the house. There was no TV. There was no radio. We looked around. We looked high and dry. The meter on the house, the electric meter with the wheel that turns, mm-hmm. wasn't even turning. So, which tells you there's nothing in the house that's drawing electric. But these voices were clearly carrying on a conversation. And not only did we look for appliances that it could be coming from, but we stood there and listened long enough that we would have heard a commercial. Or, if it was a talk radio show, we would have heard they would have went to commercial. Or they would have had, they have to do a station identification on the hour every hour. You know, that's part of the radio network
right.
Podcasting system. There was nothing there. And when Robert went back to listen to the EVP, listen to the recording, you can hear them distinctively carrying on the conversation. Wow. You can't make out what they're talking about. And you can even hear the weed eater in the background where the guy's mowing, and the voices are over top of that. So I was, when we came back, got back from that trip, a lot of things started stirring up and happening again at my house. Now you have to understand, I have physically been attacked by the demonic entity that we dealt with in the IM6 case.
Mm-hmm.
It has made itself known. One of the very first accounts that took place was I had just laid down to go to sleep, wasn't even asleep, and I was completely paralyzed as this thing crawled up over top of the bed, over top of me, and I've never seen a darker red as I did in the eyes of this thing. And this is, of course, the short version story of it. It has very well made itself known. And because of that incident, my house has to be blessed and cleansed. And I have to be constantly cleansed and blessed for protection. And I hadn't had anything going on. And when we got back in July, there was a lot of things that started happening around the house. My son has one of those Woody dolls that you pull the string and it talks, hidey ho, neighbor, or, yep. There's a snake in my boot, I think it says.
And, yeah.
Well, this thing just started talking by itself. Like, you didn't have to pull the string. It would just talk. And my 17th-month-old, which obviously he was younger, he was, right around a year old or whatever, hates this thing. Like, he is terrified of it. For no reason, just terrified of it. And so things around the house, I started knowing things, lights flickering, going on and off by themselves and stuff. Well, at the same time this is going on, Robert, he's having issues at his house. And just, I don't know why, but I guess it was a week before Scarefest, I saw... Deborah Pickman was online, and I said, hey, I sent her a message and said, hey, I finally made it to the Sally house. I didn't go in. I just went and saw it. And the very next thing she sent to me was, what problems at home have you been having since?
Hmm.
and my jaw hit the floor because
wow.
I didn't connect it. I didn't put the two together that, wow, you're right. Ever since I got back from that trip, there has been a lot of things going on. And at that time, the newest thing that had been happening was it was my 17-month-old was reaching for someone that wasn't there. Literally was reaching in mid, reaching up to, for somebody to pick him up, that, but there was nobody there.
Wow.
That was the newest thing at the time. And we talked, we had a good little conversation, and she was like, it's probably best that you didn't, that you guys were smart enough not to go into the house, but you more than likely probably have got, the stuff that's going on is probably being escalated because you went to the house.
Huh.
And so then I immediately sent a message to my buddy Robert and said, look, we've got to talk. And he had stuff been going on since we got back, and his text reply to me was, oh, my God, I'm so glad you said something because I thought it was just me. And then he started telling me the stuff that he's been dealing with. So that's the biggest thing about this field is that people don't realize when you do this, it's not a game. You know, you can't just go to the world's largest ghost hunting store, a.k.a. Walmart, and buy you a digital recorder and a camera, and because you watched a couple episodes of a show, you're now an experienced professional ghost hunter, and you go in and tell these families, oh, yeah, you're here to help, you're going to take care of them, and you go in and you start provoking and making these families mad, and the first time it lashes out, you get scared and run out the door with your tail between your legs, and the family is left holding the bag. They don't get to leave. They can't go nowhere. They're left to deal not only with what they've been dealing with, but now you've pissed it off. So now it's going to torment this family even more. So then that's where people like me and Bruce and other people in the field, we have to come in and clean up the mess.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, progressively, the last 30 years, it's gotten worse. You know, I clean up more messes. Now, it's so hard to get on a fresh case that nobody's touched because I'm so busy cleaning up the other messes that these supposed, you know, teams do, trained by a basketball team or to, you know, be with another team for a while before they decided to break off and have caused more problems than they have. You're not helping anybody. You're not helping the field, mm-hmm. You know.
All right. Bruce, let me ask
you. I'll get off my soapbox.
No, stay on it. This is what we do the
I'm
show
very
for.
Passionate. I'm a very passionate person about
we
this
agree.
Field. I'm very passionate. You know, my thing from day one has always been, it's not about finding ghosts. It's about helping people. Finding ghosts is just a bonus, and you really have to be. I have two definitions, and this is not in stone, or this is what it is. It's what I've the definition that I give the two terms. Ghost hunting to me is someone that is looking for an adrenaline rush, a thrill. They're a thrill seeker. They're going out to cemeteries. They're breaking into abandoned buildings or homes. They're just out there to have fun with it. They don't really care. They're not going to be the ones that sit and listen to 40 hours of evidence and go through the video. They're just there for that one time thrill of a rush. Then there's the paranormal investigator. This is someone that lives and breathes the field. They're 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. They're working on cases. They're helping families. They're going over hours of audio and video, and they're looking at ways to advance and help the field. And you know, they may have a certain niche of what they do. You know, they may be an EVP specialist, or they may be a video specialist, or they may get into the whole energy issue and how the parallels and, you know, they all have their niche, and to me, that's the difference. That's, you know, there are two differences, and that's, I'm not saying that's set in stone and that's the way everybody else has to believe, but it's just over the last 4 years, it's kind of, that's the two groups that you see.
Right.
And, you know, it's the old school guys, they still use the term ghost hunting, which you have to understand their definition is the same as mine as a paranormal investigator. But it's kind of like you've got these two groups now, and people are getting hurt. You know, they're not
right
emotionally. You know, there's teams that wouldn't know a demon if it jumped out and petted them on the back and gave them a big hug, more or less, you know, how to deal with one, and they're going into people's homes and telling them, you know, yeah, you've got a demonic entity in this house, and it's going to, you know, destroy your family. And these people, they're so distraught that they're picking up and moving, or it's causing, you know, couples to get divorces and children to be hurt. And it's not a game.
Yeah, I agree with you. Bruce, I wanted to ask you before we go to break, and we have about 4 minutes before we do, a two-part question. And this is along the lines of what Chris was talking about. Being that you work with TAPS and you've been out on investigations with them, does TAPS have anything in place if the group comes across any kind of malignant spirit or malevolent spirit, something that's evil? Is there some group or maybe possibly a bishop or a religious person that TAPS can reach out to? And the second part of the question is, are you concerned with your son hunting, or paranormal researching, I should say, with him out there doing what he does with TAPS and on the show? Are you concerned with him possibly putting himself in danger running into some of these types of entities?
Well, there's always that danger. You know, I believe that Dave does pray, and, you know, but I don't know how much precautions everybody does their own thing.
Right.
But, you know, I am concerned because, as Chris was saying, you have to be careful because, you know, evil entities will pretend to be good people or a family member or such, as theories would have it. They'll pretend to be your best friend, and then, you know, as soon as they lull you into a sense of false security, you know, things start happening, and they're not good. But yes, TAPS too. They have a lot of people that they go to. If they run across that, they you know, I'm not going to get into who they talk to or anything like that. But they'll direct the people. They'll get the right people in there to help. And another question that we're always asked is, once we leave a place, the places you see them on television or whatever, if there's a problem. We don't abandon them. Obviously, we can't get back there sometimes, but we will. If there's a problem, we will have a group go back there and do follow ups. We don't leave anybody high and dry.
That's great. That's good. Good stuff. Well, it's been an interesting conversation with you gentlemen so far, and I got to say thanks for spending some time with us this evening. It's been a lot of fun talking to both of you, and we still have a half an hour left in the program to go, and there's a couple other things I know Sean and I want to get into, being that we're getting closer to Halloween, and we want to travel down that roadway as things get a little spookier this time of year. So keep your thinking caps on, because I got some interesting questions to ask you after the break. But Sean, what do you say we go ahead and take our break a few minutes early, we get it out of the way, and we come back with our guest Chris Dedman and Bruce Tango, and we continue this great conversation?
Sounds good to me. Beyond the Edge Radio, you've been listening.
That's right, and we're live every Sunday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time here on the Para X Radio Network.
We'll be back with more from the bad boys of Alternative Talk Radio. BTE Radio. We'll be right back. Lock your doors. Lock your doors. Lock your doors. Lock your doors. And open your minds. Beyond the Edge Radio is back.
And welcome back to tonight's program. It's a little different tonight, in case you haven't noticed. We don't have musical bumpers on the show anymore, so we don't have that extra 15 seconds to go back and just, you know, put the music on and let it carry us in from the break. But we're going to overcome and conquer, and you know, we're going to keep doing what we do here at BTE Radio. We want to thank everybody for tuning in tonight to the program. It's 9:33 here on the East Coast. We're live on Para X every Sunday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. We've got to say thanks to Dave Jones and the wonderful crew here at Para X for giving us a home and allowing us to ramble on incoherently for 2 hours. And tonight we've got some great guests on the show who are doing a great job. And, man, we got on autopilot. And Chris and Bruce, man, you guys rock. I got to tell you that right up front. But
thank you. I appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure.
Thanks, Eric.
We're glad you're with us. And we were talking off the air, and I just want to throw this out there real quick. We were talking off the air about paranormal unity, and there's so many people that say there aren't paranormal people that get along and there isn't unity in this field. Well, I got to disagree with that, and I'll tell you why I got to disagree with that. I'm a Bigfoot guy. I'm a cryptozoologist. I study creatures. I'm not so much the paranormal guy. I do some paranormal investigating. I'm an enthusiast. I look into this stuff, but I'm not on the same level as Bruce and Chris and, you know, the guys that get out there and do the ghost investigating, the research, and helping the families. That's not my forte. But from an outsider point of view, looking into the paranormal community, I was welcomed in to the paranormal community and treated like a member of the family. I have been so welcomed at conferences. I'll give you an example. Bruce and I met at Phenomenology. Bruce never met me before, but he was so kind and so considerate. We talked, and we were talking on the phone. You know, we saw each other at Parafest. We talked. What a great guy, and he's been so generous and you know, genuine with me. And Chris, same thing. I mean, Chris and I met in 2009 at a festival in Uniontown, or Fayette County, excuse me, and we became fast friends. And that seems to be the case with a lot of people I've met in the paranormal community, especially, and we talked about this too, Bruce, the people that have the shows, everybody thinks they have egos and attitudes. Well, I'm finding out quite the opposite. I met Grant Wilson at Parafest, and there's a lot of people that think Grant has a big ego. And they say, you know, Grant, he's a TV show, he's a celebrity, he doesn't have time for everybody else. On the contrary, Grant is probably one of the most down-to-earth people I've met in quite some time. Very genuine, very generous, and I was very, very glad to see that. I sent him an email saying, you know what, I was really surprised to see that you're such a down-to-earth and great guy. That really surprised me, and it made me really happy, because you always hear that about the TV celebrities, you know, they're just untouchable. But that's not the case in the paranormal field. Everybody I've met has welcomed me in with open arms and treated me like I'm just part of the family. So I feel quite blessed.
Eric, I have to back you up on that. Grant was at Scarefest last weekend with us, and of course Bruce's son and Steve and Adam was there, and Grant was one of the most down to earth people. I think, you know, it's funny because we go to these events to do lectures and stuff, and I hate the term para-celebrity, but a lot of people put us in that category. But, you know, we're fans too. There's people in the field that you know, we have just as much as respect and admiration for as people do for us. And Grant has always been one of those people that I've always wanted to meet. You know, and not just because Bruce is on here with us tonight, but his son and Steve, those three, I've always wanted to meet them. I've never been in an event where they've been until Scarefest, which, you know, Scarefest is in my backyard. It's my hometown where that event takes place. So mm-hmm. I take pride in that event and stuff. And and all three of them, really, Steve and Dave and Grant, but especially Grant, just down to earth, man. Like, you would have thought that we had been friends forever,
yep.
You know. And he really is. He's very down to earth. And I watched the whole weekend, you know, at like the VIP party and the costume party. And he interacted with everybody. And he worked the room. Like, he didn't, you know, hide in a corner somewhere and had, you know, had the security that was provided to him, you know, keep people away. And, you know, I think, he told the security people to go, you know, go on and do something else that he didn't, you know, want them there. That it was like, you know, I'm here to, these are my fans and my people. So it was pretty cool. Now there was another celebrity there that not so open and willing to have people around them as much. But that was a whole nother issue, I think. But yeah, no, Grant and Dave and Steve were just, you know, and it's so funny because if you've never met Steve is very quiet.
Yeah.
He's very low. He speaks in a very low tone. He's just kind of like one of the guys. He's just kind of, hey, you know, I'm here, you know, kind of thing. But, you know, it's not just TV. He really is pretty quiet and laid back kind of guy. He's not, you know, you would almost not know he was in the room. You know?
Yeah, yeah. That's the impression I got of Steve when I met him at ParaFest. But, I mean, like I was saying, with meeting Bruce for the first time and you for the first time and becoming friends, when I go to these Para events, and I go to a lot of them now, I probably do between 10 and 15 a year, it's like getting to see friends and hanging out with family. And you don't just shake hands. You give each other a hug. Hey, brother, how you doing? Hey, man, good to see you. And you hug each other and you say, what's going on? And it's exciting to be at these events. So anybody that says there is no paranormal unity needs to take a step back and look at really what's going on. Sure, there's groups that fight and argue, but for the most part, there's some good people out there, down-to-earth people that'll help anybody, give the shirt off their back, and just... I'm proud to be... I would even consider myself part of the paranormal community now.
Absolutely, brother. We've accepted you as one of our own.
That's a bad thing for you guys. Just to forewarn you.
They'll regret that later.
Well, if you don't remember, when we met... I started bombarding you with questions left and right because, you know, I have a, as you know, now, you know, I have a big interest in the crypto side too, you know. Mm-hmm. I wish I had more time to get involved in it, but, I think if you remember, if I remember right, the first question I asked you, where would you say, the place where the most sightings are of Bigfoot in mm-hmm. the country.
Yep.
And I think you said, now you know what, did you say Oklahoma?
Well, that's one of the places in the country that actually has a lot of cryptid activity, Bigfoot reports. But there's like three or four hot spots.
And PA, right? PA has a lot also, right?
Yeah, oh yeah, we have our share. Yeah. Yep.
Oh yeah.
But you know, the Mothman is one of my favorite... I envy you. You know, like I said, I got to get over there to Point Pleasant, West Virginia. That's on my bucket list, you know, before I become a spirit.
Come with us next year.
Maybe next year, yeah, that'll be all right. But, I'm really intrigued about that whole story. But, the whole gambit, I love UFOs. Dave and I talk about a lot of things. We just don't talk about and spirits and ghosts and investigations. You know, we have a wide range of interests.
Yeah, this is pretty cool. It's pretty cool, guys.
You know, one of the coolest things that I've ever heard someone say, and it was actually a paranormal investigator, which was really kind of cool, was John Tenney talks about in his lecture, and John Tenney talks about weird and crazy stuff and stuff that really gets your brain going and thinking. And I don't know the exact number, so don't quote me on the number, but you'll get the gist of it from the story, from the what I'm going to tell you. You know, he tells you in his lecture that, you know, he lives in Detroit, and he'll tell you that in, you know, that area or whatever, there's like 1.3 million deer, let's say, okay? I mean, it's a high number like that. And in the time that he's lived there, you know, he has maybe seen five or six deer.
Mm-hmm.
So he says, now, as far as the Bigfoot goes, most of the pods or the areas that they accommodate, you know, there's 3,000 of them. So out of 1.3 million deer, you've only seen five of those. What are the chances that you're really going to see a Bigfoot when there's only 3,000 of them or whatever exist? And it's a very valid point. He really got me thinking, and I was like, wow. Like, he's really, like, I'm always going to help people in the paranormal field and stuff, and I deal more with the demonic end of it, but I'm really looking into the cryptozoology area, especially the Bigfoot. I've always had an interest there, and me and Johnny Hauser have talked about it here recently, but when he puts it in that perspective, you really start thinking, what really are the changes?
And you add in the intelligence of the Bigfoot, you add that into the equation, and it makes it that much more difficult. You know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And this is a self-contained group that takes care of their own. They, you know, they probably bury their own. They're, you know, it's, what are the chances that you're really going to actually ever see one when their numbers are not as great as, let's say, the population of deer that, you know, that make up Michigan or whatever, where you've only seen five in your lifetime and there's 1.3 million of them, or whatever the number is. It's a large number like that.
Right.
You know,
mm-hmm.
You're probably not. You're probably not going to ever see, you know.
I equate it to looking for a needle in a haystack, and the needle is constantly moving.
Always moving.
Exactly.
That's right.
Yeah.
Very valid points. Very valid points indeed, and I agree with you. You know, the numbers are very low and spread out across the country or around the world as they are, and the way they move and migrate and their intelligence, and there's a lot of things we don't know about them. It makes it quite difficult to try to collect evidence and prove they exist, but we have fun doing it, you know, and that's what it's about. To be honest with you guys, though, as long as I've done this over the years and I've had fun doing it, I've actually enjoyed meeting people and going places a lot more than I have done the Bigfooting. I think that's the biggest benefit from it, is just getting to know people, even helping people out who have Bigfoot encounters that are scared or petrified or afraid, you know, they're going to die or something. You know, they have that traumatic experience, and you're able to provide them that peace of mind and answer questions for them that they may not have the answers for. And to me, that's beneficial, and that's very rewarding for me. So there's a lot of positive things to it. But
I agree with you.
Yeah, we got on the soapbox ourselves for a few seconds there, so I was following Chris's lead from earlier. But we have about 15 minutes left in the show, and what I'd like to do, guys, is steer this conversation towards, I'm sure this is all our favorite holiday, Halloween is coming up in about 6 weeks, and it's that time of the year. I get so excited when fall starts to creep in, and the days get a little shorter, and the nights get a little longer, it gets a little darker quicker, and you hear that black cat meow down the alleyway and that cool breeze on the air, man. It just gets me all excited because Halloween's coming. I know you guys love Halloween. What do you love about Halloween the most? And do you find that your investigations and your cases that you investigate really increase during this time of the year? We'll start with Bruce.
Well, I absolutely love Halloween. I always have. I honestly, I get all prepared for the trick-or-treaters and stuff, but you know, I might be wrong, but I don't know if kids trick-or-treat as much as when I was a young man. I don't know. I would tend to think not as many, because I was really cool. I didn't have to go very far. You know, I go around a block, but I come home and change my costume three times, so I didn't have to go far. So, you know, people wouldn't recognize me. I could go to the same house three times on my same block. But I enjoyed Halloween. I still do. It's just a great time. It's one of my, you know, like you said, Eric, the fall is, I love the fall. I love the change of the leaves and everything. But what was your question again?
Well, I wanted to know why you liked Halloween so much. And,
I did a little.
Yeah.
What was it? But I just love Halloween. I really do. And that carried over with my two sons. And I had a habit of our tradition was I would bring home a scary movie for 7 days up until Halloween. And
nice.
You know, if I come back on at another time, remind me, I'll tell you the stories of, you know, what I used to do to them. I tortured them poor guys. But we had some fun. But I love Halloween. I think it's great. And, you know, I know I probably didn't answer your whole question, but...
Well, the second part of the question, Bruce, is do you see your cases you're investigating increase this time of the year? I mean, obviously people are in that mood, and they enjoy having a good scare. And I'm just curious to know if, as paranormal investigators, you see the number of cases increasing during this time of the year.
Well, you know, common sense might tell you that it might, because of the fact of the time of the season, and people are a little more aware of these type of things, and it's more like, you know, you're going into a house and somebody's saying that the house is haunted, so you're prepared for it, so you're more aware or looking for it. But myself, I don't see any big difference. I just feel, in my opinion, that they're going to show if they want to show, if they, you know, if there's going to be paranormal activity, it's going to be there for whatever reason. And that's what we're trying to find out, why sometimes, and everything that we deal with, obviously, is theory, why we get, you know, sometimes in thunderstorms, it's supposed to, you know, get busier, and that seems to be true. And when you decorate the house, that's supposed to be true. So, you know, when things change, but I just don't know the answer to it. We're trying to find out the answers, but as I always say to people, you know, I don't know if we're ever going to find out answers, but we're trying, you know. And to take it a step further, and this is just my opinion, I don't, you know, who knows if we're meant to know the answers, but all I know is that these things do happen out there. I've seen and heard so much during my life, which actually sort of solidifies my religious beliefs, mm-hmm. that there is something, you know, after life.
Chris, we turn it over to you, my friend.
I kind of want to kick off there with Bruce is. You know, I don't see a pickup in cases or whatever during this time. You know, it happens when it happens. People may more willingly come out and tell their stories during this time, that of the activity that they've got going on and stuff. But I'm kind of at the point now where I don't need to convince anybody that it's real or that it exists, because I've seen it. I know it does. I'm here to help the people that are dealing with it and living with it every day. You know, I'm kind of past the whole trying to convince people that it's real. I know it's real. I've seen what it can do. I've seen what it does to families. Mm-hmm. So my energy now is focused on dealing with those families that know what's going, you know, that it is real and that it's going on. And, you know, you can choose to believe or not. That's kind of the concept I've taken on it now. Halloween is my Christmas.
Mine too, brother.
I love Halloween. It is, you know, I am Agreed. Determined within the next 2 years that I'm going to open up a haunted house. I've been studying it for the last 3 years. I've kind of been going to some conventions and shows, and I'm recording stuff from TV, and my dream is to own a haunted house, a public haunted house. When I was a kid, I used to do one in my neighborhood in my basement, and let all, you know, of course, you know, and you paid by candy. That's how I trick-or-treated. You brought candy to go through our haunted house, and it was kind of cool. So I've determined that as an adult now and older and dealing with things, that I want to open my own haunted house. So, yeah, I love this time of year. I love fall, you know, pretty weather, you know, nothing like, you know, having a nice bonfire in the back and, you know, your hoodie on and, you know, sipping apple cider or hot chocolate or whatever. It's just, I love this time of year. So it's
good too. Yeah, this is my favorite time of the year, and as you said, Halloween is my Christmas, man. I absolutely love the holiday.
Something
I dress
we
up,
all have in common.
Yep, I dress up and scare the kids and decorate my yard up and, you know, cemetery. You've probably seen the zombie pictures of me from Halloween's past.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we have fun with it. But, guys, we have a few minutes left on the program. We're going to wrap things up here. Before we go, let's ask both you gentlemen to give out one piece of advice. If you had to give out anything, any type of advice to people that want to get into this field, what would it be? And if you could throw any advice out there to help people, who encourage them to continue doing what they're doing. Chris, we'll start with you.
Don't rush it. If you really want to get into the field, find a reputable group to get with. You know, study, watch. You know, nobody's got the magic key or dose of how it's going to be done. We're learning every day. But at least, you know, get with a team and learn the how it works and how to deal with things and stuff, and open your mind, open your horizons, network, You know, start making friends with people. Start, you know, setting up, you know, communication and opening up dialogue with other teams and other people, because you never know when you're going to need their help. Do not be too proud to ask for help. You know, don't try to take it on your own, and don't think that you've got to do it by yourself. There are people willing to help. You just got to reach out for it. And just, you know, don't promise anything that you can't deliver. And respect the field. Respect what you're doing. Respect what you're going up against. And I tell people all the time, you know, be sure you protect yourself, whoever your God is or whatever you pray, you know, protect yourself. What, you know, it's not going to hurt nothing. You know, what's the least that it's going to do but protect you and your team and the family that you're dealing with? You just got to be, you got to be prepared.
That's good advice. Good advice. Bruce?
Well, my answer is pretty short. And the advice I would give is, the one word is patience. You have to have some patience. And to be honest, when I was younger and I'd get involved in stuff, I didn't have the patience. You know, my son, Dave, is the one actually, he's the daddy, just got to settle in. And even though I've shown him a lot, he has taught me patience. And now when I investigate, I'll just go to a place and I'll settle in someplace that I feel comfortable in, and then just hang out. And you just have to have patience. You know, just because you're in a spot and nothing's happening, you know, you're there 5-10 minutes, nothing's happening. You know, nothing's happening, I'm going to go in another room. You just got to, this is just my opinion now. You just got to settle in, and if they want to get involved with you or interact, they will. I mean, I'm not saying that you have to stay there the whole time, but don't be in a rush. Just, you know, just have some patience, because you really need to do it, doing investigations. And then there's the going over the evidence, and that's the hard but enjoyable part of it, because when you you can go over hours and not get anything, and then bam, you'll hit it, and it's all worth it. But patience is something that you should really have.
Fantastic advice as well. Gentlemen, we run out of time on the program. We've got to call it a night, and I want to say thank you, Bruce, for coming on the show to present and promote the Monster Mash Mayhem event, which is coming up October 12th. And you want to give out that website again, Bruce?
It's www.monstermashparty.com. And again, if there's anybody that wants to come and is listening to the show and they buy a ticket tonight, by midnight, if you buy a ticket, I'll give you a free one. So that's because you're listening to BTE. So that's just something giving back to you guys, because I appreciate you letting me come on.
Thank you. You're welcome anytime, Bruce. We're hoping that you'll come back for another visit with us on the show, and we'll talk more ghost hunting with you. That'd be great.
Sounds good. And Chris, it was great talking to you again, buddy. I love listening to your stories. You take care now. I'm going to go, guys.
Okay,
you take care.
Have a great night, Bruce. Thanks for calling in.
Enjoy myself. Bye-bye.
Good night. All right, Mr. Dedman, the floor is all yours, my friend. How can folks get a hold of you if they want to reach out to you and learn more about what you do? And I know you got some events, big events coming up. We're going to be together at the end of the month in October. I'm looking forward to seeing you again. Throw out some information, my friend.
First of all, Pittsburgh just scored a touchdown. Go Steelers. second of all, and I'm not a Steelers fan, but I'm just kind of being cool because that's where you're from. So.
I knew it.
yes, I'm headed back to Pittsburgh for the first time since the event we met at. We're going to be doing the HorrorCon and the weekend of the 25th, 26th. At the Gardens. Where's that at?
The Ross Trevor Ice Gardens. Yeah, it's in Bell Vernon, PA.
Yeah. Mount Vernon, PA. It's going to be a lot of first-time event, but it's a lot of cool people going to be there. So, anyway, if you want to find out more information about what I'm doing, you can always hit up the website. It's chrisdedman.com. And then, of course, if you're dealing with anything that is beyond the norm, such as something that's evil, malevolent, or demonic, paranormalclergy.com. We've got teams all over the United States. So you're not alone.
Fantastic. Fantastic, my friend. Thanks for coming on and spending the evening with us and sharing the time with Bruce. We really appreciate it.
Oh, it's an honor, man. The Tango family, they really are the real deal. They're wonderful guys. And I've just had the pleasure the last few years being able to hang out and meet them. And I forgot all about Bruce being at Phenomenology. So that's the first time I had met him was at Phenomenology. So, and then, again, I got to work with him in Waverly, Ohio at the Emmett House. So just an all-around, he's like a dad. He really is.
Yep.
He's like the dad of the group. So
That he is. We've got to call
me on, Eric.
Oh, my pleasure, buddy. Hopefully get you back on again soon, man, because it's always great to talk to you, and we've got so much more to cover. So keep your calendar open for us, brother.
Absolutely. You guys have a good night and take care.
All right, you too, man.
You
God
too,
bless you.
Thank you.
All right, God bless.
Take
Bye-bye.
Care, bud. All right, folks, what a great show tonight with Chris Dedman and Bruce Tango. How about it, Sean?
Excellent show tonight. A lot of fun, good information, real different.
Yeah.
It was a great show.
Yeah, it was fun. It was a fun time and great to Fresh talk guest. To those guys. And unfortunately, we lost Lon, but he'll be back next week when his power's turned on. Hopefully before next week. But
that we are going to have to set up a generator or something, because next week you and I are going to be out in the woods for a little bit anyhow.
Yeah, we're doing some camping this weekend looking for Bigfoot, so it should be fun.
That's right.
But,
it'll be a good show. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, we'll have fun next week on the program as we welcome back Mac Maloney talking about Area 51 and all those mysterious places around the world. We'll get into more discussion about that. Should be a great show. But we're out of time. We got to run. Thank you, folks, for tuning in tonight to BTE Radio live here on the Para X Radio Network. Sean, always a pleasure, my friend. And take
pleasure.
Us home.
Folks, you've been listening to Beyond the Edge Radio. Sean Forger, Eric Altman, para-x.com. Check us out, beyondtheedgeradio.com. We'll see you next
Join us for another live edition of Beyond the Edge Radio. Sunday nights from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the Para X Radio Network. Archive shows are available on Podomatic, Parapods, iTunes, Stitcher Radio, the Para X Radio Network, or our official website, beyondtheedgeradio.com. To contact Eric, Juan, or Sean, email us at beyondtheedgeradio@gmail.com. Beyond the Edge Radio is a Beyond the Edge entertainment production heard here on the Para X Radio Network.